Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, 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 everyone. It's that time of the week again, time for Training Tech Talk. And I am Nancy Monroe with Allison Black, my co-host.
Hello!
And our live studio audience.
Yes, they are wonderful.
They are alive, yes. And they look like they're itching to play some games. You know,
they sure are. Some of them are wearing T-shirts that spell fun and games.
Well, you've had some experience with a live audience in a gaming fashion when you work with Comedy Sports, right?
Oh, definitely. It's a lot of fun.
Yep.
Absolutely. Improvisation.
Why don't you tell our listeners? Yeah, tell our listeners what Comedy Sports is.
Oh, sure. Comedy Sports is a wonderful company that has franchises all around these great United States of ours. And what they do is they kind of apply a sports mentality to improvisation. So, like the people that actually run the performances are look like referees. They wear black and white shirts, just like referees, and black pants. Can be a woman, can be a man, because it's an equal opportunity situation there. And it's typically, most of the time, very family-friendly kinds of shows. They'll let you know if they're not going to be one. But typically they are, and there's a lot of audience participation in these improvisational games. There's two teams that play against each other, but it's not the kind of competitiveness where somebody's going to go away mad or hurt. Everybody's really winners in the whole thing.
Right.
The competition is just there to help, I think, heighten the fun of the whole experience.
Yeah.
So
it's really
awesome.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So our topic today is fun and games. Does gamification really help somebody learn something? Because I've been in a lot of trade shows lately, and everybody's like, it's gamified? Do you have gamification? And I just kind of like, well, you could turn it into a game. I mean, we do score things in the simulator, and you could, but I don't know if that's necessarily true, kind of pure gamification design. And
right.
So I found this great, I guess it'd be a blog post. But this, it's titled Gamification is Dead, Long Live Games for Learning. So I was like, well, what's the difference there? If he's saying it's dead, but he's calling gamification's dead, but games for learning. And so it was written by a guy that used to or does design a lot of video games.
Ah, okay.
And he's kind of making the case that, you know, a lot of people try to do gamification that, you know, so here I'll just read it. The gamification concept goes something like this. Take an existing set of activities, say banking or exercise, some kind of schoolwork that's mundane. Apply a set of game rewards in the form of points or leveling or badges. You know, we see a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And as if by magic, the world will become more fun, workers more efficient, and learning more effective. As a game designer of more than 20 years, this idea rubbed me wrong, like really wrong. And that's kind of the point I'm trying to make is just because you say it's gamified or there's gamification or you get badges, does that really motivate people to learn it? Or is it just people that are competitive will play the game but maybe not necessarily learn something?
I think the truth is probably somewhere right in the middle of all those things. I honestly think gaming for gaming's sake is just, I'm trying to come up with a totally G-rutted way of saying something. It's mental masturbation, I guess is what I would call it. That's as close to the safe thing I could say here. Because I think, you know, it's helpful to, you know, oh, yeah, let's add a game to it, but let's not do it for just grins. Let's do it where they're actually learning something, or the situational experience helps you make better decisions in the moment. I think it I typically want to go to more scenario-based learning, and if we want to throw badges or whatever or cool things like everybody applauds you at the end or your boss is tracking the number of, you know, score points, whatever. But ultimately, the material itself has got to reinforce what it is you're trying to help them learn.
Right, right. And so so he puts in here, this rather than looking at gamification of learning as a process that's applied to curricula to make school more interesting, we should recognize that learning at its best already has game-like elements that are the latent and waiting to be unlocked. And so the example, he says, in industry, our objective should not be to gamify learning at all. Our task is to show how learning is already very much like a game and draw out those game-like qualities. As successfully launched SimCity EDU, a classroom version of the world widely popular consumer game, so he's talking about how they so they based this philosophy around the core of the game would be the same activity as the core of competency that you're tackling, so whatever it might be, learning English.
Right.
So the English language arts skill of argumentation. So he's saying argumentation. So after doing extensive research on the fundamentals of argumentation, our game designer locked themselves in a room for hours on end, drawing loop diagrams, sketching dialogue, and eventually discovering how a Pokemon-style battle-slash-adventure game could be a clean, precise fit for the key activities of constructing an argument and critiquing another's argument. So I won't read the whole thing because I'll put a link to this, but it's not a piece of software that gamifies argumentation. It's not even a game about argumentation. It's a game of argumentation. So that's where I think the real differentiator is. It's not like you're turning math into a game, and it's not a game about math. It's the game of math.
Right.
Or the game of sales, you know, so it's that in and of itself is the game. And I think that's kind of where some people get a little disconnect when you reach a certain level, you get a badge, you know, it's like,
right.
Okay. Some people don't care about badges, quite frankly.
Well, exactly. And I think, too, I feel like I'm a broken record on this. It's never one size fits everybody. It's,
mm-hmm.
I think that you look for things that are, we were doing that four-door learning tool, the Moodle tool. And they have different ways of accessing the same information. You can read a PDF document if you want to. It's a white paper on all the information you need to know. You can read that for a while and then challenge yourself by going through this quizzing thing that allows you to kind of rapid-fire terms and glossary terms and all kinds of, you know, definitions of things and conceptual things. Okay, great. Now let me go blog about it, talk to somebody else about it and really feel
mm-hmm.
like I get the information. It's like multiple ways of accessing the information, I think, is your key to getting people to understand the material. And like you said, finding the real game within what it is you're trying to teach is always more satisfying than trying to bells and whistle something, you know? It's just like
well,
a flash.
And kind of like what we've said in our improv development model is let somebody design their own game or their own scenario of, you know, just even building flashcards are coming back in style, you know, create a game board. You know, so let them decide. If you were to build a game around this topic, and as they build the game, guess what? They're going to learn about the topic. I mean, that in itself, it's not really gamification, but the fun of building a game around a certain topic, you know, could be the way that you approach the learning process versus the game.
Right.
Like, do the complete opposite. Let them build their own game, and voila, hopefully they've magically learned something.
Well, and it's amazing. That's that same concept, Nancy, of being told, oh, I need you to speak on this topic that you don't know anything about next week.
Yeah.
Or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you go and you learn the information, not just to learn it, but to then be able to convey and answer questions about it and help. It's learning by having to give back, learning how, you know, it just... Yeah, I think that's really that's the way to get that into your head and get you thinking on a lot of different levels emotionally about what it is you're having to convey or what your task is or what you're doing.
I was talking to a client the other day. We were putting together a role play, and it was very apparent to me that the current linear approach was not going to work because in their conversations, they encourage people to do a customer discovery conversation. You know, so how many TV sets do you have? You know, what types of shows do you like to watch? To basically unveil, do they need premium channels? Do they need DVRs? Do they need more than one DVR? And so originally I thought they had to ask it in a certain sequence. She says, no, they can ask it in any order they
anytime.
Want. So,
yeah.
So I said, well, let's do the reverse. And I said, now, humor me a little bit while I explain my theory. I said, what if instead of we took it as a conversation, just a pure kind of conversation simulated with a customer, what if we said you're going to have a customer calling in and you know this much information about them? And so in a discovery, what types of lifestyle questions would you be asking them? So having them kind of flip it a little bit to say, instead of just kind of the patent, you know, really understanding why am I asking them this particular set of questions? Do I really understand what lifestyle means? Do I really understand all the technical things that I need to maybe uncover in that conversation as far as who's your carrier today and how do you have it set up and are there any changes that you want to have? And then they're trying to cross-sell products around security systems, telephone systems, you know, so they can do cable, internet, wireless, security, you know, all of these things. So, you know, instead of just doing it in a way that's kind of the direct method, have it be more indirect so that cognitively they're having to really think and understand, oh, I need to figure this out because we have this checklist of things that they really want us to kind of cover, but I need to really understand the customer's profile in a way that allows me to have a discovery conversation that's not like I'm going through the checklist.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think that when you know more about the person, again, there's a creepiness factor that you have to be aware of, too. I know things about you that you don't know that I know. But because that just, nobody wants Big Brother.
No.
We just don't like that. That feels weird. But being able to have a place to start from and understanding what that customer values, which I, you know, is an interesting way of looking at their, I think it's a higher level of sales, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's why I was trying to explain to her. It's like it's a higher level of thinking. So from a cognitive standpoint, it also should help them when they are in a live conversation. There's something that happens in your brain when you do that other kind of switch at a higher level so that they feel very confident in what they're asking of them, and they've gone through that, all those different outcomes or potential outcomes of those responses based upon breaking it down into those categories. So we're still working with them. And she's like, well, okay. And she says, that's good. She says, I like that because we are trying to get them away from
the checklist.
You know, the checklist, but at the same time, she really wanted to kind of measure, like, because the other thing we're doing is the emotion analytics. So if they're not really having the conversation with the customer, it doesn't really make a lot of sense for us to measure their emotions because they're really thinking in a different spectrum than as if they were interacting with the customer.
Right.
And so that part of it wasn't really going to be any data they could really use.
Right.
So we're
but it sounds like
gonna,
what you're doing, though, with that client is applying exactly the same psychological profiling as you're asking them to provide.
Yeah, exactly. And it took, and it really was, like, in my brain, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm like, wait, what if I did the opposite? It's opposite day.
Right.
You know, so it was just, for me, it was very interesting to kind of think, oh, why don't I do that with other customers too? So, yeah, so that was just kind of an interesting exercise, and we're still kind of working on that. But you know, I just found this other blog post, 20 examples of games or gamification for sales training. Now, I haven't had time to really vet these out to see if they really are good. But one of the things they point in here is by 2015, 40% of global 1,000 organizations will use gamification as a primary mechanism to transform business operations. In fact, according to research, the worldwide market will grow from $242 million in 2012 to $2.8 billion in 2016, with enterprise gamification eclipsing consumer. Oh, I don't believe that. No, I do not believe that data at all. I don't think enterprise gamification will ever eclipse consumer gamification.
No. No.
I disagree with that.
No, that's somebody selling something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Somebody selling a product.
I don't believe that.
Anytime you're pulling out that word eclipsed, when we're not talking about actual planetary objects.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah.
But I'll put a link. There's some of these I've heard of, and I would not even consider them games. So I'm curious why they put some of these in here.
It's a term. It gets a little broad. I was thinking, you know, we're not talking gamification when you put an animated character in to be your narrator for your course. It's not that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah,
that's
so they...
Adorableification.
Yeah. Yeah, animation vacation.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, this is, I mean, they put Bloomfire in here. Bloomfire is not a gamification pure, I mean, they sell customer support, social learning, sales enablement. They might have some of that in there, but it's, I don't know. I'm not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chatter in Salesforce, that's not a game. It's an instant messaging tool. I mean, you can maybe create a game out of it. Badgerville for Salesforce. Oh, Badgerville. So you can put embed in Salesforce ways that people get badges. So again, I think they're mislabeling that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that that really speaks to the challenges of understanding what that term is and is not. And when you're talking to your clients, to understand that you may have to have that conversation around what are you thinking of if they come to you, we would like to do this. What are you thinking of what that looks like? You know,
right.
Where have you seen this? Let's really understand what terms you're using. I don't want to say, oh, so that we're, you know, that you're using the term properly might not be the best way to convince your client that they should move forward with you. But so that we understand what we're talking about, because the term can be obviously a nebulous kind of term. So...
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I've always said if corporate training America, or the world, I should say, could have the same budgets that commercial consumer video game people have, then it'd be, full-on simulation, and that definitely would be an extreme learning environment.
Sure.
But we don't. So I think people are just trying to get on the bandwagon of gaming to kind of put the badges or the points or the ribbons. I don't, you know. And part of me is like, we're already ruining an entire generation through what I call the blue ribbon generation.
Everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah. Hey, you got last place, but here's your trophy. You know, what is that teaching people? I'm sorry. If you lose, you lose. And that teaches you to be better. And so this is, there's a whole book. Let me get on my Kindle. It's on my Kindle. Oh, but this, it's fascinating to me. And it's around the concept of, instead of, let's say you're an A student and you've always been an A student, and then you get to high school or you get to college and something happens and you get a B. So all along you thought you were this super intelligent person. Everybody told you were super smart. You got all these awards, you know, because it's comparing your success record with other people, and yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm smart. But then some people get to a point where they start to fail at some of these things, and then they start to either doubt their intelligence or they make excuses for it. So instead of they'll find another path where they continue to be the top of their class.
Oh, I was going to say, or they hate their parents.
Or something like that, yeah.
Sorry.
So, I'm pulling up here. But let's say you have the mental attitude of, oh, here it is, mindset. How we can learn to fulfill our potential. But Carol, is it Carol Dweck is the author of this, and she has two different minds. I wish I could find the term that she uses in here. But
she has two different heads.
Saying, so let's. Yeah, so if you, and somebody else was kind of stealing the same concept in his presentation the other day, he talked about brain science and sales, and I'm like, oh, God, if I hear brains, hear either brain science one more time or data scientist, I'm going to throw up. And so let's say you are, so they did this with little kids around studies as far as, I think it was like a marshmallow game or something like that. And so instead of, oh, I failed. They're like, oh, let me try hard. You know, let me see if I can do better. And so there's different points of attitude around learning. And if you're somebody that's constantly, like we do, we constantly, like, I'm not going to take no for an answer. There's got to be a way I can figure this out. Or how do I, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat versus, well, guess we can't do that. Or I guess we'll have to hire somebody else to do it because we can't figure it out.
Right.
And so that whole blue ribbon, where I was going with that originally, was that whole blue ribbon generation is you're doing a disservice to those children by not allowing them to recognize what failure looks like. And as Americans, it's funny that we always say, oh, you know, we don't fail or we should never fail at anything. But the truth of the matter is America was built on millions and millions of failures. All of the entrepreneurs out there, Thomas Edison made how many light bulbs before he got to the one that worked?
Right.
And telephones. And I just watched a thing on the Wright brothers, how many airplanes they crashed before they got it right, no pun intended.
Yeah, right.
You know, so in building this mentality or this reward system into the work environment now, I think has to be approached very cautiously because you've got this millennial generation coming up who had the blue ribbon culture tied to them. And so it's almost as if either A, they expect it and expect some kind of incentives or always expect some kind of reward versus going out and achieving something that truly is just an accomplishment in their own head versus waiting for somebody else to give them that blue ribbon. So I think that's kind of, you know, the fine line that we have to cross there is, you know, do we always build in these incentive plans that put in people's heads that they won't perform beyond what's going to get them that blue ribbon? And so let me
right.
put this. I'm going to put a link to this thing in here, but I'm going to check out some of these because I don't
well, what
trust
it sounds like you're trying
games.
To do is articulate, going back to the idea of finding the game in the game, of finding it's always so funny to me. I remember I was homeschooled for a while, and it was great because I was an unusual kid and I was able to move at the level of education that my mom could afford me to, and so it was very exciting. But the neat thing about it was learning was always fun. And so having new ideas and new thoughts was exciting.
Right.
And I think that we have to figure out, and that's the challenge, I think, is figuring out how to ignite and spark that in people who may have had an educational situation that has done nothing but not encourage that is, I guess, a nice way to put it.
Right.
And so helping people now in this corporate situation to all of a sudden, oh, yeah, you're going to love learning now. Like, I never loved it for the 12 years I was in school. Yeah. So how do you get me to love it now?
Brainstorm.
You know?
Oh, my God.
Right, and love it immediately. Like, oh, okay, yeah, now we're going to do it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, so again, yeah, try not to build the environment where they're not going to learn unless they get rewarded. That's,
right.
You know, a dangerous, or they're only going to perform up to the level that gets them that reward, and that's it.
Right.
Like, okay, I got my golden ticket, or I got my gift card, because that's what it was. That's what it took. Versus going above and beyond that.
Somehow, I'm going to tie this back to dog training, but I have read by people who have lots of knowledge about these kinds of things that even training dogs is more effective when the reward isn't always given when it's expected. So if you give a dog
right.
a treat every time they come back, that's awesome. But they know they're going to get a treat when they get back. And it's far more motivating for them to not always get a treat when they come back. So it's kind of a – and sometimes
mm-hmm.
a treat is giant for coming back, and sometimes it's just little. And
right.
And keeping that variety in there, I have to say, is kind of fun. I know that in my own situation, there's times when I've been bestowed upon tickets to a particular sporting event or tickets to a play or some kind of thing like that, which was really cool. Did I do
right.
anything
well,
specifically for that? No. It
nope.
happened.
It's like, hey,
was
all
I
right.
a good employee for a long time?
Bonus.
Sure. But it was a nice thing. But it wasn't something that I took steps to obtain, because somehow when I take the steps to obtain them and I know what the whole thing is, it really loses the fun for me.
Right.
It's so predictable.
Right, exactly.
It's boring.
Yep. Well, it's like the whole slot machine, you know, what do you think,
right.
you know, gambling. They know exactly what's going on there. They keep you
right.
hooked, and it's just – and but they did say there's a the next generation doesn't want to, like – I forget the term for it. Pull the something arm.
Lever? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, which I like doing. I like pulling the arm.
The physical.
I don't gamble very much, but yeah, it's like,
yeah.
They're much more entertained by more interactive games. You know, it's like video games. So
right.
if you see, if you've ever been to a casino lately, you see a lot of these digital video game players are very much like video games, or even have, I think Monopoly is one of them. They have, you know, similar to old board games, and now they're digital gambling games. But
wow.
I don't know. But yeah, we're getting a little off track. But
digital games.
You know, so those are, you know, so they've obviously put a lot of research into those things, and a lot of psychological studies have been done around the professional gaming world. And so that's why I'm thinking there's no way the professional corporate gamification is ever going to surpass consumers. It's just, you think of all the games that people play on their mobile devices. You think of the,
right.
I forget what they call them, where you play games around the world with each other, you know, and collect objects and sell objects, and has this whole form of commerce built into it. So, yeah, I just don't see that happening. But, you know,
yeah,
but I'm thinking,
yeah.
don't even – so if you are thinking of building a game, you know, you don't even have to go high tech. I would say certainly a card game or a game board. There was a company here, a startup company here, that was actually creating some game pieces. And I thought, well, that would be kind of fun to create your own company game board. But Root Learning has been around for years and years and years, and they build these big, I don't want to call them mind maps, but I think that's what they call them, mind maps, where you map out almost like the Candyland game, you know, how it goes around in a path, and you put on, like, what, you know, so what's our product life cycle? And so they create kind of a infographic around that, but you can, I think they sometimes create interactive training sessions that go along with that. And to me, I think that's really the approach you want to take, because you're getting people's involvement in building the game, demonstrating, you know, is this the right path that we want to go on? So it's a form of discovery too.
Sure.
But we're gonna run out of time, I think. So I'm gonna wrap it up here. Oh. So if you have any topics or ideas that you think we should be talking about in any of our shows, send me an email, Nancy@knowledgeshift.net. And if you have people you'd like for to be a guest, send me that information as well. So thank you again, Allison, for joining me.
Thank you, Nancy. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too.